Hello, America, and of all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another installment of... Ah, shit, let me do that again. I completely flubbed that one. All right. 3, 2, 1. Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Sologi, and Teresa Sammons is with us for another round. Say hi to the good people, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, so this episode is for February 14th, 2026. And it doesn't really feel like February right now. It's starting to feel more like spring. Sometimes here in the South, we get what we sometimes call fall spring. Happens every so often. Because for those of you hadn't been paying attention, we had basically gone through like 3 or 4 weekends straight of winter weather advisories. And it ended up getting snow twice this year, which is very unusual. Mostly if we get snow at all, especially where I live, we only get it once, but, we managed to get it twice earlier this year, but, it started warming up now. So we're kind of moving into March early, I guess. But anyway, among the things we will be discussing, this week, we got more political news, including, some more fallout from the Epstein files. We've also got, a proof of citizenship law that was passed by the House GOP, but may or may not be dead in the water in the Senate. We don't know yet, but that's kind of what it's looking at. We also found out that one of the January 6th rioters that was pardoned by the president was convicted of something even worse this week. And we got that. And of course, we got our entertainment related news, including some teaser trailers. Some business side of the news, including rights acquisitions and the ongoing saga with people still trying to buy WB Discovery. We got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But before we start, as is tradition, as we always do, we start off talking about all of the things we've been doing up to this point this week. And it's also a tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, tell us what you've been doing this week.
Yeah, we've been enjoying at least 2 days of nice weather here.
Yeah.
Had one day last week, which was nice, but also a recipe for disaster because they meant a lot of melting snow that then got turned into ice overnight. Mm-hmm. So I'm just walking out to my car a lot here. I had to be very ginger walking around, or else I was going to be slipping on whole sheets of ice. Get to my car and go to work. So that was fun. But now we're in a point where it seems like it's going to be up in the 40s and maybe 50s for the next handful of days. So it'll be much more full tilt melting of snow, which is great. There's too much of it here. Especially going around the city and seeing all the sidewalks and such that have been blocked off due to snow. So that should clear out so that people that, you know, need to walk to get around are able to do so. Same for bus stops and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be nice. But yeah, for things I've been doing, I watched Predator Badlands on Disney Plus. That is out on there now. That was quite good. That's another Dan Trachtenberg Predator thing, and those have all been good so far. So that's good. It's it features a sort of runt of his litter, of one of the, I forget what they call them, the Yutza, whose older brother is a kind of, you know, sparring with him to train him to get through his rights. You know, we have to go and kill a big beast of some kind to you know, get to manhood and join the clan proper. But he goes through the training, and then his father wants him to, the older brother, to kill the younger brother because he's just a weakling, and weakness is bad for the clan kind of thing. So the older brother refuses to kill him, ends up locking him in his ship, And the dad kills the older brother. Before he does that, he manages to activate the ship and send it off to the planet with a notoriously difficult to kill creature called the Kallusk, I think. And sort of in dealing with that, he lands in Kallusk and ends up running into an android from Weyland-Yutani, played by Elle Fanning, who's half a body, the top half, stuck in this like nest, and she ends up convincing him to help her out, and she'll help him bag the kill that he wants. And along the way, he kind of learns more about a new way to do things instead of just the way that the Yuta kind of do things, which is you have to be a loner and strong and all this, and starts learning about she like brings up the notion of the wolf pack, that kind of thing, where the alpha wolf is the one that best takes care of the clan of the group. So he kind of becomes, very receptive to that kind of idea, that that might be the best path forward. And it kind of goes and progresses towards the synth group that was sent there by Weyland-Yutani to capture the creature that he is supposed to kill, and all that. And yeah, various things happens. It's got some. The good bits of humor and all that. They find a weird little monkey creature that becomes their buddy, that they name Bud. And yeah, ends up being a pretty fun time. Something that, you maybe didn't need to know about, so, or we didn't really need more exploration of this part of the predator thing. But yeah, it was a fun time though. Let's see. I've been continuing to watch Schitt's Creek. I am towards the end of season two, where the family, realizing they're kind of still stuck in the town, decides to kind of become a part of the community, in a sense. Eugene Levy's character, gets an office and thinks that he's going to come up with the idea that will get them back to being rich and all that, but just kind of ends up hanging out with Bob and doing various things. Moira, where I'm at, she's going to be running for city council, and trying to use her skills for to gain power in the town. Yeah, David is working at the what was the Blouse Barn, but he's kind of completely overhauled it. To get rid of all the tacky clothes. That's like a fun bit there. And Alexis is just broken up with the two men that she most had an attraction to, and dealing with being single. So, fun time. A lot of good bits here. But yeah, that's been fun. I also watched the first season of Fallout. They put that on YouTube, so I watched that, and that was pretty good. The story kind of felt pretty predictable at a certain point, because they talk early on about how the governments don't have the power, the companies running the vaults do, and so it's like when they get to that point of revealing what all is going on, it's like, yeah, I figured something like this was going on. And the nature of what the other vaults were doing. So yeah, not too surprising, but still pretty good. That's been pretty much what I've been watching. Though I did watch what Best in Show, which is really fun, especially Fred Willard doing the commentary and asking the
Oh my
guy that
gosh.
knows everything about the dog show stuff, and he's asking the dumbest fucking questions.
He was great.
And that's all fun. And yeah, the whole thing with the best scene is probably the one where the one dog starts freaking out, and her owners are just being like, "Go get the toy! Go get the toy! Where the fuck is the toy?" run and get Busy Bee. Run, run. She can't find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Starts freaking out herself, so.
And you're like really so fun. Glad they don't have kids.
Yeah. They got rid of the dog and were much happier.
Mm-hmm.
At the end. And I also watched Waiting for Guffman, which was really fun as well. Has less of the whole huge cast, but does have Fred Willard and Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara that do a really good job in that, where they're basically working on a play for the 150th anniversary of the town's founding, which was founded by people that were looking for California but gave up where they were at in Missouri. So that was a fun time. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been watching. Been playing more Fallout 4. I had the weird quest that kept breaking sort itself out because I just randomly leaving the house in Diamond City. The lady just showed up and is like, oh, here's this picture to, you know, figure out what will happen with this heist thing. And I was like, oh. And nothing broke. And I was like, all right, well, that worked out. And I basically just took it to the one guy and sold it for a few hundred credits or, you know, caps and moved on. So I was like, I don't really care about dealing with this whole thing.
Yeah,
I've been going around and dealing with various other things. I found the vaults that I think is one of the DLCs. You get the vault that you can essentially do the Fallout 4 version of Fallout Shelter. You can build that out and all that. And I just went in and killed all the ghouls that were in it kind of thing, and just didn't do anything in there because I just didn't really care about doing that stuff yet. But yeah, that's a fun little thing. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Well, I've been watching a little bit of TV too, and picked up a movie that we had been meaning to see. Waiting for Guffman is still on my list. I've been meaning to watch it for like a couple of years, but we didn't, or we haven't yet. But we did pick up Repo Man and watch that, and that was definitely different than what I usually watch. It was interesting, that's for sure. Very, very young Emilio Estevez. Kind of like probably straight out of high school or something. And he stumbles into becoming a repo man. And it just, it kind of goes a little bit off the rails too. It's not all based in reality. just to say that without giving it away. But it's a fun time for an old movie, which, I mean, I guess it is kind of old at this point, but yeah. We've been watching through the Orville. We're two seasons behind, I believe. So we've got more to catch up with there. And I did do the first episode of season two of Has-Been, so I've got it all set up and interested in seeing how this goes along. they definitely laid the stage. But for gaming, I played kind of a crazy amount of Champions of Norrath, an old EverQuest port type of side thing that was on the PlayStation back in the day. Played that and remembered, you know, like cord culture, I guess. Somebody tripped over the cord as I was saving at a checkpoint. And I was a little concerned that perhaps it wasn't going to, but it did. It was okay. It was okay. I'm like, oh no, if I lose all my space or all my place, I don't even know if I'm going to finish this game. But also playing the usual, like, Bellatro, unlocked another deck the other day. So still working on all the achievements for that. And Kingdom Two Crowns, of course. Actually playing a little challenge co-op island of that right now. A lot, but also not a lot. But that's pretty much what I've been doing. What have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I have been playing Donkey Kong Bonanza some more. I finished you could call it the end of the whole campaign, but it's not really, because there's actually like a little extra part at the end that's still there. But it's amazing, because once you get to the end of the game, you realize that, because here's the thing. About halfway through this game, they end up coming into a place called the Racing Lair. Because, like I said, Donkey Kong Bonanza, you're essentially going underground and you're going deeper and deeper until you eventually get to the core. And so you're going through these various layers, which all have these various, like, towns and peoples living in them. And one of them you do get to is called the Racing Lair. And the Racing Lair just so happens to have none other than Diddy and Dixie Kong there, having not aged a day, which brings up so many questions. Because remember, in this game, Pauline is with you and she's like 13. So, yeah. And that's weird enough as it is. But at the very, towards the very end of the game, none other than King K. Rool himself shows up and becomes the, like, final villain of the game. And he makes it sound like he's been down there for a long time. But it's like, a lot of it just, it's like, and then out of that, not only does he do that, but that whole last area where he's basically, made his camp or whatever, is made up of some of the most infamous enemies that you encountered in the Donkey Kong Country series, including the original Kremlings, as well as those annoying as fuck spiked wasp bees things, and even the vultures, and even those freaking, like, rolling armadillo things that show up in, I think, the first game. Yeah, they're there as well. And then at the very end, he manages to, like, sort of take on the power of it's complicated, but basically he takes on the power of, like, the core that's at the core of this world, manages to make his way up back to New Donk City, and, because that's where Pauline is apparently from, and, he, like, temporarily takes it over, and it's like, okay, so, like, what the fuck is the timeline here?
Yeah, it sounds like maybe they got a time machine going on.
Yeah. Like, okay, Pauline is like 13, which means that, either this is not the Pauline that's supposed to be in, Donkey Kong, or, they've sort of just said that Donkey Kong isn't a thing anymore or whatever. And it brings up so many questions. Because anybody who's played, pretty much all the Mario games since Odyssey knows that Pauline's been, a part of Nintendo again for almost a decade now. And I mean, she's even in the Super Mario Brothers movie, however briefly. And yeah, it's like, is this the same Pauline? Is this supposed to be a different Pauline? It just is it, or is it, are we, should we just accept the fact that there is no timeline in Nintendo world, and it really is just Miyamoto's whole thing of them being actors on a stage?
Yeah.
None of this shit makes any sense, is what I'm saying. But yeah, so I'm playing that. I'm also playing, well, I'm also still playing Splatoon 3 online. Nothing really new to talk about there. But I also finally got around to purchasing and playing Trails Beyond the Horizon. I haven't played it as much this week because I've been wanting to get through Donkey Kong Bonanza, so I can, move on, but move back over to Mio so I can finish playing that for review. Trails Beyond the Horizon, still a damn, it's a Trails game, and we all stand the Trails series here, so it's still really fun, and I'm loving it. I love being back in that universe for another 60, 70-hour game experience. And you know, I'm just like wondering like where the hell they're gonna take this story going forward. But yeah, I'm loving that. Books, you know, new normal books reading, nothing new there. And as I said, like at the top of the show, I just love the fact that, you know, the weather is warming back up a little bit and I don't have to feel like I'm freezing to death every time I walk down to the mailbox. So that's all well and good. And so yeah, that's what I've been doing. So do you guys have anything y'all want to add before we move on?
Nope.
No? Okay. Well then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I wanted to sort of get off the whole like the temporarily get off the whole, you know, series we've been doing of, you know, B-tier terrible obscure fighting games and talk about sort of a subject that I it's one of those stories that, you know, it's crazy that it happened because it requires so many people just having a complete and total breakdown of communication for it to happen. And yet it actually happened, and it happened before the new millennium even started. So quick question. Have any of you guys ever worked in a grocery store before?
Well, Walmart before it was a super Walmart, but no, not really.
Okay, what about you, Chris?
No.
No? Okay, so I've worked in a couple grocery stores. And one of the things that they basically teach you, they train you about, they absolutely shove into your head the very first day that you start working there is that you absolutely have to make sure that the perishable stuff is safe and at proper temperature. You know, if you're closing up for the night, got to make sure all the eggs, the cheese, the dairy, all that stuff is, you know, put over in the freezer section, you know, where it can keep nice and chill. All the frozen foods need to go over to the freezer section. All of the canned goods need to be made sure they're at the proper area, 'cause if something happens and you end up just leaving one of these things out overnight, there's just no telling what can happen. Because let's be honest, eggs go bad pretty quickly if they're not in a proper temperature. And most modern grocery stores, you know, they all have backup generators, they all have that stuff. So, you know, even if like the electricity goes out or the power's cut off or anything, they still have enough power going that they'll be able to keep stuff, you know, frozen, keep the frozen stuff frozen, keep the cold stuff cold, all of that stuff, right? But what happens when a supermarket not only has its electricity cut off, but then has the electricity cut off, the gas turned off, has the store abandoned, and all the stuff is left in there for months on end until eventually it becomes a biohazard?
Ooh, I don't even want to think about smelling that.
Yeah, well, this actually happened. And it happened in probably one of the worst possible places that something like that could happen. It happened in Fort Worth, Texas. Yeah.
No.
So, this is the story of Mexia Supermarket. Now, this is one of those stories that happened way back in 1999, but it became sort of a viral thing that people on the internet got interested in because, well, I'll get to that. But it's one of those like one of those like, you know, lost media things that people had to search for before they finally found it. But I'll explain. So basically, this is what you need to know. So, Mexia Supermarket. It was a supermarket that was opened in Fort Worth, Texas. It was established by a small little company called Advanced Investment Corp that was owned by two Laotian immigrants, Mr. Dung Chang and his wife Kung Song. After it attained a 15-year, $975,000 loan from Comerica, Bank of Texas. They decided to host this little place at a little shop on 3900 Hemphill Street, which was about a 36,000-foot rectangular building, which had originally been owned by a previously small little food store called Daniel's Food Store, which was a business that was headquartered in Dallas. At some point between 1997 and October 5th, 1998, the shop opened, which was the first taxable date for sales tax of that year. But as you can imagine by how the story goes, they didn't get really good profits, and they were about over $1 million in debt owed to various creditors. So they eventually had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Now, when the store actually closed, nobody's really exactly sure. The Associated Press says it's closed in sometime in July of 1999. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram says it closed at the end of August. And by September 15th, there were nearby residents that were already calling the city to inform them of the store's closure. The store's health permit was canceled and removed from the list of active food businesses. And this is sort of where all the stuff sort of just, everything just sort of goes haywire. So Advanced Investment Corp. filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy on September of that year, sometime around 28th or the 29th. And an attorney by the name of Stephen Strange was hired on to represent as the lawyer for that company. The Comerica Bank of Texas that I mentioned earlier, they acted as the lien on the building. So this is where everything goes haywire. So sometime after all this happened, people started, the media started talking to this guy, Stephen Strange. Strange said that he had called the lawyers of the bank to inform them of the bankruptcy and that the store had closed and that he had been given the keys. Now, for those who kind of don't really know how like Chapter 7 works going from there, basically from that moment forward, the bank or the trustee would generally take steps to dispose of the property inside the building. That's generally how it's supposed to work. But for some reason, they didn't. Quote Strange himself, "I can't really tell you what happened. Apparently, the electric company turned off the electricity October 18th of that year, and obviously no one had done anything about it then." Now, that exactly when the power went was turned off, again, still kind of up in the air. Some say it could have been as later as November 13th, or it could have been even 60 to 90 days before that. The director for Fort Worth Department Environmental Management actually said as much. He said, quote, "About 60 to 90 days ago, the guy flipped the breaker, locked the doors, and walked away." And after that comes just a complete breakdown in communication. Because generally what happens is like when a grocery store like this declares bankruptcy and, you know, ownership goes to a trustee or whatever, they're supposed to get people to go in, take out all the remaining food products that are in there that are perishable, and then usually they will like donate it to like a, you know, like a food bank or something like that, or they'll just have it destroyed. That didn't happen. So instead, every product that remained in the shop, and this was basically like all of the stock that they had in the building, started rotting. And that started attracting the flies, the cockroaches, the rats. And then on October 20th, the residents began to complain of a foul odor. One individual told the Dallas Morning News that "I got a headache just from walking past it." There was a housekeeper at the nearby Texas Christian University, which was quoted as saying, "It's strong, especially when the wind is blowing. I told my husband several times that something smelled awful. Something smelled like dead animals. Then one day I walked over there and there were flies all over it. It was gross." So finally, on October 27th, the city discovered that the property was in bankruptcy and had been transferred to a trustee. The bank told the city they had hired a contractor to assess the store and began cleaning by November 2nd. When the contractor, a Plus Budget Movers, A-plus budget movers, sorry, arrived at the store, it became clear the company was just not qualified to handle the situation. Then on November 4th, the bank told the city it was not the legal owner of the property and was not responsible for the cleanup. More than a week later, the health department declared the store a health hazard, and the city began preparing to clean it up. And this is the part where it starts to become sort of a viral story, because then the media stepped in, the local like media, and they actually filmed like several days of like the cleanup process. And I want you to understand like what it was like when they finally came to look at this thing, because the parking lot of this shop, of this place, was filled with dead rats, dead roaches, dead stray cats that had shown up, just littering the place.
Ugh.
And when they looked at like the windows, because, you know, like a normal, like pretty much like any normal grocery store, it's got clear, you know, glass windows or, you know, plastic, whatever windows. It was covered in a swarm of flies on the inside.
God, just. Oh, everything about this is terrible.
Oh, yeah. And the thing was, the situation was so drastic that they basically had to take several precautions in order to ensure a safe environment before they could even go into that thing. So, like I told you about the guy who was the head of environmental management, he was quoted as saying, "We have flies, rats, and other things living in it. It's not so much the animals, but the potential diseases they carried. He later said, "I've been in this business for 14 years. This is the first I've ever heard of this. You think of what has been there for 90 days, produce, dairy, meats. It's kind of hard to comprehend." So over that weekend, they had to fumigate the building, which, I mean, that's obvious. And then the schedule to begin cleanup began November 15th. However, it was then postponed until the following day to collect federally required indoor air samples for analysis and to ensure worker safety. Because, again, not only, even though they had fumigated this place, you're still talking about a place that had rotting produce and dairy stuff in that thing for just so long. And on top of that, there's also just the sheer volume of chemicals they used during fumigation, because that place was basically a gas bomb in building form. So they did some analyses. They found out like some of the stuff that was festering in that store. Probably the most prominent was E. coli, obviously. The spokesperson for the city, Pat Sfazina, said E. coli was abundant, active, and growing when workers first entered the building. That day, an environmental management specialist also detected dangerous gases and low levels of oxygen inside the store. So we're not just talking about, you know, stink. We're talking about poisonous air, basically.
Gosh.
Yeah, and very low levels of oxygen, which meant even if you could deal with the smell, you couldn't breathe in there. So the workers actually had to go in there with hazmat suits, complete with like air filtration systems. And they had to be decontaminated every time they stepped out of the building.
That is probably the worst any kind of cleanup that has ever existed.
Yeah, and remember, this is all in the middle of Fort Worth, Texas. So, you know, we're talking the Southwest here. You know, and granted, like, it's October and November, it's in the fall, but even in the autumn, it can get pretty hot and humid down there, so... Anyway, they had to go in there. They had to use loaders and shovels to collect all the rotten food and any liquid material from the store, which they then transferred to large sealed trash containers. Fortunately, and this is good, and this was the good news, most of the perishable items had been packaged in plastic or other packaging, so, you know, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't, like, they had to, like, you know, truck out, like, rotted produce or whatever. All of it was still packaged, so it made the cleanup a bit easier to deal with, you know? Granted, there probably was some leakage involved too, but yeah. Fortunately, there were no cuts of meat that were left hanging either. So that's also good. By the end of November, all food products were removed from the building, and the end of cleanup was scheduled for November 26. Unfortunately, sanitation of the building wasn't completed until November 30th. The initial cost of the cleanup was estimated to be around $10,000. Yeah, it wasn't $10,000 by the end of that. It was very quickly surpassed. Supposedly, cost that they were accruing was like $5,000 to $8,000 a day. Nobody knows who footed the cleanup bill. The city, apparently someone did eventually, but the city has never like made that public knowledge. There were salvageable stuff in the place that was still managed people to get. They did manage to get like soda machines and some cash registers. But as you can imagine, none of the food was recoverable, not even the canned goods. In fact, Sfesina, the woman who was spokesperson for the city, said those canned goods were covered in bacteria. Even if we went in there, got through the cleanup process, there is no way they could sanitize them and guarantee someone wouldn't get sick. Eventually, there was a meeting that the city held in December of that year, and the property was eventually, finally, left vacant. Eventually, another supermarket chain came in and bought it, called Terry's Mart. They left after a full few years. Then eventually, another group called Cross Family Trust came in, and eventually, it was bought by a Family Dollar. And then again, it became a Dollar General. Then the Dollar General closed in late 2025. So as of anybody knows, as far as anybody knows, it's currently vacant right now. So you're thinking like, okay, so how did this thing become like a viral thing on the internet? Well, in January of 26, 2010, there was this show that was on the History Channel called Life After People. And essentially what it was, it's like, what happened if, for one, if at some point the human race just disappeared? What would happen to like all the buildings, the cities, the structures, as, nature or whatever slowly sort of reclaimed it, what would happen? And they featured what happened to the Mexia supermarket on one of those episodes as an example of like, this is what happens when like a property with all this stuff in it is just abandoned. And essentially, because that whole episode, like, it was based around the idea of like, what would happen to humanity's food supply if humanity just disappeared? And what the reason this caught on is because it ended up showing a bunch of footage that never actually showed up on the original like local news stuff. There had been like hours of footage that they had actually filmed for it, and they only used like 75 seconds of it. So as sort of the story of this sort of made the rounds of the internet, people started to want to know like, where is the rest of this footage? And it was considered like lost media for many, many decades until they finally managed to sort of show more of it for this episode. And then finally, back in 2025, early la about the middle of last year, they finally found more B-roll and newsreel of this. And it shows like footage of them in the hazmat suits, carrying out like pallets of all this rotten stuff gone bad, of them having to go through like decontamination every time they go in and out, of, people just talking about just the sheer awfulness of the whole situation. And to sort of put a little bow on the end of this story, you're probably wondering, what happened to the original owners? Well, after the company de after their company declared bankruptcy, they decided screw it, and they moved back to Laos, and they haven't been heard from since.
Huh.
And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. if you're like curious and you want to like know more about this, there's a bunch of there's like a bunch of cleanup footage of that's been like distributed all over YouTube that will tell you, that'll show you like what this place looked like when they finally were able to go into it. Yeah,
I want to
it's
see that.
hold on. Hold on just a second. I can do that for you right now. There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Just you know, don't do it on a make sure you have an empty stomach when you do, 'cause yeah, it gets gross. But then again, you know, I've worked at a grocery store, so I've kind of seen worse to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so with that, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with our show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And our first story for the week is that the House of Representatives recently passed the SAVE Act, which, amongst other things, because like with a lot of these legislations, it's a bunch of stuff rolled into one, it's going to require strict proof of citizenship documents for people to vote. And when we say that, we don't mean that you can't have like a driver's license. No, you've got to have like a passport, a birth certificate, all that shit.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we've known about this for like what, half a year now? It's going to disenfranchise women exactly like me.
Yeah.
Women who are married and change their name.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, Save America Act, would require Americans to prove they're citizens when they register to vote, mostly through a valid U.S. passport or birth certificate. It would also require valid photo identification before voters can cast ballots, which some states already demand. Pretty much on party lines, 218 to 213 passed. They're saying the legislation needed to prevent voter fraud, which is not a real concern.
No, they just need to keep white married women from voting because we vote Democrat.
Yeah, pretty
Yeah.
much anybody but your average white man.
Yeah.
Because yeah, federal law already requires you to be a U.S. citizen. It already gets confirmed as you're getting registered in every state. And so yeah, voter fraud is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah.
And yeah, as they say here, yeah, they're doing this before the midterms. Because they want to stop the blue wave that's coming. And it is coming. So yeah, we'll see what where this goes, but I don't think the Senate is going to end up passing this.
Yeah, it's pretty much a lot of it's pretty much believed that this is pretty much dead in the water as soon as it gets over there. They've the Dems have said that they're going to filibuster it using the 60 vote filibuster thing. And they've
Yeah.
already got one Republican who said that he's going to vote no on it with them. So, of course, you've also got Fetterman saying he's going to vote yes, but that's to be expected.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's happening. And then the Environmental Protection Agency revoked the scientific findings that underpin U.S. fight against climate change, because of course.
Yeah. That would essentially allow them to start deregulating a lot of things. Yeah, the rescinds a 2009 government declaration known as the endangerment finding that determined that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases threaten public health and welfare. That's a legal underpinning of nearly all climate regulations under the Clean Air Act for motor vehicles, power plants, and other pollution sources. Yeah, this eliminates all greenhouse gas emission standards for cars and trucks and could unleash a broader undoing of climate regulations on stationary sources such as power plants and oil and gas facilities. Legal challenges are nearly certain to happen. Yeah, Trump brags about this, calling it the single largest deregulatory action in American history by far. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin called it the holy grail of federal regulatory overreach. So
mm-hmm.
those two are happy. It's a bad idea. So yeah, I think we need to, people will challenge in courts and we'll see where that goes. Hopefully that gets blocked because yeah, I don't think the vehicle stuff is really all that concerning because I don't think very many of the manufacturers are going to want to make worse running cars on that stuff, especially as electric and hybrids are continuing to get more popular.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no sense making it easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yep. And then we had another school shooting that happened, but this one happened in Vancouver, British Columbia. They killed 8 people and themselves, along with wounding 25 others.
Yeah, it's a fun whole thing here. We're here. I'll get it. But yeah, it happened at a town outside of Vancouver. They killed an adult, 5 children, before that shooting, the shooter killed their mom and their stepbrother in the process. So that's a fun whole thing there. Yeah, just a awful situation. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of it there. Rare sight in Canada, but gonna become more popular as the guns we have starts to infest the people's minds up there and they become more gun nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they don't have the Second Amendment.
Yeah, they don't. And in fact, the Canadian Supreme Court has ruled more than once that people are not entitled to a gun for self-defense in Canada. So, yeah. You know, you can't use that excuse either. So, yeah, and I'm pretty sure, like, this is the first major school shooting they've had in, like, decades. Like, keep in mind, school shootings have happened in Canada before, too. Obviously, they're not as numerous as they have been in the U.S., but they have happened from time to time. And I think if I'm looking at it, this might be one of the ones with the higher body count, because usually they tend to end up being around 4 or 5 people. But what's especially weird is, like, all of the, and frankly, this is 100% because they should have done. It's like, yeah, we're not naming the suspect because, you know, they're underage and everything.
Yeah.
As they should. But,
apparently a kid who's had prior mental health calls issues to their home.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a girl, so that's also a rare,
yeah,
rare thing, too.
Yeah, and it's there's like this weird, like, a bunch, because you know how the social media is when stories like this shit get out. Immediately, you know, they said, oh, they were trans or they were Nazi or all these other things. You know, all that other stuff. We just don't know.
Yeah.
The government of British Columbia is keeping mum about it, as they should. So that's pretty much all the end of that story for now. But then we go on to this other story where, turns out, one of the January 6th rioters that had been pardoned by President Trump, was convicted this week of sexually abusing children.
Yeah. Was a Florida handyman, has been convicted of multiple state charges of child molestation, mm-hmm. exposing himself to children. He attempted to bribe one victim with money he claimed he would receive as part of the restitution for January 6th defendants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the latest case of a pardon. Capital rioter committing new crimes after receiving a pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unfortunately not an uncommon thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they found him guilty of 5 charges, including molesting a child under 12 and another under 16, as well as lewd and lascivious exhibition. Mm-hmm. He's acquitted of one charge of sending sexual material to a child. So yeah, they're going to ask for up to life in prison. So sentence next month. So mm-hmm. we'll see where that goes. But yeah, Not great.
Always bringing their best and their finest, aren't they?
Yeah. And then we've got this little story. The top lawyer for Goldman Sachs is resigning because turns out he had very close ties to Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, she.
Well, she.
Kathy Ruemmler, top lawyer at Goldman Sachs and former White House counsel to President Barack Obama, resigned on Thursday after emails between her and Jeffrey Epstein showed a close relationship where she described him as an older brother and downplayed his sex crimes. Which, makes sense. And she's also stepping down as chief legal officer and general counsel of Goldman Sachs as of June 30th. But yeah, she repeatedly tried to distance herself from the emails and other correspondence. Had been defiant that she would not resign from Goldman's top legal post. She's held since 2020. She's called him a monster in recent statements. She had a much different relationship with him before he was arrested a second time for sex crimes in 2019. Called him Uncle Jeffrey in emails, that she adored him. So. Makes sense.
Yeah. Ooh, you. And then finally, the news was put out that ICE wants to spend over $38 million on warehouses around the country to turn into detention centers.
Oh, sorry. Billion.
Billion. Not 38 million, 38 billion. For the record, the pushback on this is coming from pretty much all sides.
The local jurisdictions don't want to give up land to the federal government without any sort of notice, because they are trying to buy these things kind of just on the down low. I wouldn't be surprised if they are, downplaying who is buying them, buying these warehouses and such they're trying to acquire. The Republican New Hampshire Governor Kelly Ayotte posted the document online amid tensions over ICE's plans to convert a warehouse in Merrimack into a 500-bed processing center. ICE plans 16 regional processing centers with a population of 1,000 to 1,500 detainees, who stays would average 3 to 7 days. Another 8 large-scale detention centers will be capable of housing 7,000 to 10,000 detainees for periods averaging less than 60 days. The document's also refer to the acquisition of 10 existing turnkey facilities. Plans call for all of them to be up and running by November. As immigration officials roll out a massive $45 billion expansion of detention facilities financed by Trump's recent tax cutting law. This is really awful to see. They also mention non-traditional facilities. Comes as ICE has quietly bought at least 7 warehouses, some larger than 1 million square feet, the past few weeks in Arizona, Georgia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Texas. 6 cities scuttled warehouse purchases when buyers decided not to sell under pressure from activists. Several other deals in place like New York are imminent, however. They're just trying to buy up as much of these things as they can.
And people shouldn't live in warehouses. People should live in homes. But the people that they don't consider to be American enough are going to be the people who live in these warehouses.
Well, they're essentially building makeshift jails.
They're concentration camps. There's everything that they put in there, including the incinerators that they have planned. I mean, there's just no good that's going to come from this. Which we all know. I mean, we're preaching to the choir here.
Some of these locations, I assume, have laws against this kind of stuff, especially without any sort of prior notice. Because buying up this kind of property and then converting it into something completely different, generally not great. There's a thing called zoning. There for a reason.
Maybe bureaucracy will save us.
What's left of it.
Yeah, but it's not all terrible, because we do have some heroes of the week to discuss. One is a Ukrainian Olympian, who was sadly disqualified for having images of the war dead on his helmet. Because, there's that whole war that's still going on.
This Vladislav Haraskevich was going to partake in the Skeleton Men's competition, but had been disqualified because he insisted on wearing a helmet painted with the faces of Ukrainian athletes killed by Russia since the full-scale invasion in 2022. He said on social media he believes the IOC was unfair in its ruling Monday that the memorial helmet violates a ban on political speech during the games. But yeah, this has been kind of the Olympics of political speech, as a lot of American athletes have been speaking out against what ICE has been doing, the Trump government as well, to which Trump complains constantly about them, hating their country. And it's like, no, they're doing much more for their country than you've done. I
Here it's
guess
like
that's a tradition for the Olympics.
And the other story, because Senate Democrats have blocked two Republican-backed measures to keep them open, the Department of Homeland Security has shut down.
ICE is still going because they have their own funding that is going to last them quite a while. But this stops the DHS from operating for the time being. Let's see. The Secret Service, the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, are impacted. Let's see what else is stopping. I believe the let's see. ICE and CBP, Customs and Border Protection, will mostly continue unabated. The TSA will be affected, though I assume people are just going to be asked to keep working and they'll get back pay whenever that gets decided upon. The vast majority of employees at the Secret Service and U.S. Coast Guard will continue their work, though they could miss a paycheck depending on the shutdown's length. FEMA, the shutdown will disrupt the agency's ability to reimburse states for disaster relief costs, which, as far as I've heard, has not been exactly doing that much lately anyway. Because I think even places like North Carolina are still waiting on funds and all that. So, yeah. Essentially, they want to put more limits on ICE. There's a list that Schumer has posted about this and has good stuff there. Sure, the GOP will not want to implement, but they want to keep their Gestapo going, they'll have to figure something out.
So, with that, we now move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first main story for the night is that a judge has stepped in and is temporarily blocking the Pentagon from taking action against Senator Mark Kelly, who was, of course, involved in that video that was educating soldiers about illegal orders.
That's been good. The charges they brought up against the whole group were all dismissed by the judge, so there's nothing going on there. But this is the thing that Pete Hegseth is trying to punish Mark Kelly specifically for his political speech. They moved to formally censure him for participating in the video where he and other Democratic lawmakers that were in the military that they can refuse illegal orders if they're asked to do something illegal. So yeah, he's trying to
Like,
demote
literally
him and
remind
reduce
them.
his retirement pay. So
And the only thing he was doing was legitimately repeating what the code is for the military.
So there's that. And then we got this kind of amazing story that happened. When there was a primary for a Democratic nomination for a House seat that had been vacated by the governor of New Jersey, and it ended in a hell of an upset because it ended up being won by Bernie Sanders' former political director.
Anna Lilia Mejia.
Yep.
She was the the American Families candidate. Yeah. Endorsed by Bernie Sanders, Warren, AOC, a bunch of people ended up getting 29% of the votes over the one, Tom Malinowski, who was the presumptive favorite, because he had been in some higher seats in the state itself, and was nominated by the mayor of Newark. So ended up getting an upset there and will likely win the seats because the Republicans had just one guy who obviously won the primary. So there you go.
So that happened, and kind of a major upset. So we'll see how that story goes from there. Then there's that ongoing story of the kidnapping of Nancy Guthrie. And this week, the FBI released some info on the suspect that kidnapped her and increased the reward for more info. Among the things they released is the security cam footage that seems to show the individual that showed up all masked with, like, a gun and everything.
Yeah. Just a dude fully covered head to toe with a gun holster right above his dick. I don't know why it's right there, but okay. And yeah, just a description of the guy. And yeah, offered up to $100,000 for information leading to her recovery and or conviction in the case. So yeah, that is, hopefully that happens, but yeah, it seems as it keeps going, increasingly unlikely that she may still be alive. But we'll see.
We'll see, because holy shit, this whole story is just incredibly bizarre.
Yeah.
Why her? You know, why? It's a bit of a rabbit hole, I'm not going to lie. Then we found out this week, Amazon has scrapped a partnership with Flock Safety after a massive backlash to the Super Bowl ad they put out.
It was probably the worst Super Bowl ad, which is interesting because there were a number of ads featuring de-aged celebrities that all looked bad.
Yeah.
But this is one couching the ring the software they were going to use here. It's like, oh, there's a million lost dogs that happen every year in the U.S., and they would use this surveillance tech they have with Flock Safety, where they would be able to use, you know, the feed from your camera, doorbell camera, to search for dogs, and like, oh, we could get, you know, rescue one dog a day, and it's like 365 dogs is way less than a million.
No. It's like 0.2% of missing dogs, and they're just trying to manipulate people's emotions in order to trick them into giving away more privacy.
And it's like, literally, I saw in Blue Sky training Batman technology to realize this is the thing from The Dark Knight, where Bruce is so hell-bent on finding the Joker that he's having everybody's phones being used against them to by and trying to find out where the Joker is at, which, you know, Morgan Freeman's character is like, I'll do this the one time, but I'm resigning after this kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, especially with all that's going on with ICE, like this mass surveillance tech that you have no ability to opt out of or opt into. It's just automatic. And so, yeah. But this doesn't mean they're not going to be able to do anything like that. It's just this particular partnership has been terminated, and I'm sure other companies will happily flock to this and provide something that's, you know, does essentially the same thing. Because ICE already has access to some of this kind of tech. Same with your local police departments can essentially hijack your camera feeds through some of this kind of stuff. Yeah, so not great. Probably not going to make a major change here, but yeah. Beware when you have stuff with cameras like this. The companies behind them often sell permission to use this kind of stuff without you being involved at all.
Yeah.
You have yes, locally they do. Controlled camera systems if you're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Especially all these that are relying on cloud storage.
Oh, definitely. And then we also found out that going over at the Winter Olympics, because those are going on, the medals seem to be rather of poor quality this year, because many of them just keep getting detached from the ribbons.
And getting dented easily, and one person had theirs just break in half when they dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not great. They're supposed to be, you know, at least a solid metal.
Yeah.
For what this is supposed to be, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They said they're aware there were some issues with some of these medals. Mm-hmm. They have a solution that's been identified and encouraged athletes to return them for repair.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one thing to see. Just a sign of how dumb this Olympics is.
Yeah.
I saw a story earlier that they already ran out of condoms in the Olympic Village. We're having to get more lifted in.
Mm-hmm.
For Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't know, when you put hundreds of the most fit, beautiful people in the world into a village for weeks on end, they don't have much to do when there's downtime.
Nope. No, they do not.
They're meeting people from other countries they'll maybe never see again. Like, oh, we'll hook up and have fun.
Yeah.
Like, there's often, you know, a McDonald's or something in the village because they're spending a lot of energy and need something to get them eating right.
Oh, yeah.
Eating enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's happened. Then we moved on to this. The Department of Justice has ousted their antitrust chief, Gail Slater, who had been reviewing the Netflix-WB Discovery merger. Because they are bound and determined to make sure this thing goes to Paramount.
That, or they don't want any merger to have a chance of being turned down.
Yeah.
So that's great. Yeah, I don't think they're having anybody do it right now. But yeah, the DOJ has nobody in that role right now, so we'll see where that goes. But yeah, just if you need more evidence that this administration doesn't give a shit about policing these major acquisitions. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Elizabeth Warren is complaining about this, so
yeah,
one of her chief things she keeps an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a quote here. A small army of MAGA-aligned lawyers and lobbyists have been trying to sell off merger approvals that will increase prices and harm innovation to the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Not wrong.
No. No, they're not. But, yeah. So, moving on from there, we also got the news, and of course we're now in the entertainment portion of the show. Warner Brothers Discovery says its board will be reviewing Paramount's upgraded hostile takeover offer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing they have to do. As the board is, you know, look over offers that are given.
Mm-hmm.
They've denied the others because they, you know, they typically haven't really changed anything about them.
Mm-mm.
But this one, they seem to have increased some numbers here. Yeah, let me see what they say here. Yeah, they're offering $30 a share for WBD in its entirety. That includes the additional promise of paying shareholders 25 cents per share, roughly $650 million in cash each quarter. Mm-hmm. Every quarter, the proposed Paramount acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery is not closed.
Mm-hmm.
Caveat being this is after the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Among other new pledges, Paramount said it would pay the $2.8 billion termination fee due to Netflix if the shareholders accept Paramount's offer. So yeah, that's their whole thing. And then there was an activist shareholder that was like, oh, we're getting screwed by Netflix. We should take this deal. They don't have much of the much stock anyway, so they're just being an activist shareholder. So yeah, this doesn't seem like it's all that much better.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it will be turned down by the time we get to the next show.
Probably. More than likely. So, yeah, we got that. And then we found out that Netflix has acquired the U.S. rights to the upcoming Lord of the Flies series.
Yeah. This is coming from the Adolescence creator, Jack Thorne, which Adolescence was good, so seems likely this will also be good. Yeah, this is coming from Sony Pictures Television, as they're looking to premiere at the Berlin Film Festival. Yeah, this is already launched on the BBC in the UK as of February 8th. Sold in territories across Europe, Latin America, and Asia. So, and Netflix will be getting that at some point. The 4-episode series. So yeah, be good to see.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. And then we got some teasers here. We got a teaser trailer for season 2 of Netflix's live-action One Piece adaptation.
Yeah, which is looking really good.
Yeah. We also got a look at Tony Chopper. And,
and they got the One Piece tradition of they're in a new arc, so everybody's got new outfits for a while. Dealing with the Baroque Works agents.
Yeah.
And they got the good bit of that wacky hair in there. Especially with base number 3. With that whole thing where the hair is in the shape of the 3. So yeah, this looks like it should be really good. That starts March 10th, so only a matter of weeks away.
Oh yeah, just mere weeks away. And it looks good, no doubt about it. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Spider-Noir, starring Nick Cage.
Yeah, he's reprising his role as Spider-Man Noir. Let's see, this is on Amazon Prime May 27th. He kind of goes through the whole spiel of how he became the Spider-Man in this universe. For whatever reason, they're doing a authentic black and white version and a true hue full color version of this. You can watch it in two different versions, and I don't know why you wouldn't watch the black and white one. I mean, that's the whole point. It's supposed to be like an old-timey show. Hey, if you're lame, watch the color version. Otherwise, watch the black and white. Because I was watching the that Spider-Verse movie. I was like, damn, need more of Nick Cage in this. And then this shows up. That looks like that'd be fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is the last story for the night, and I do believe we have got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, RSS, or, well, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just give it a few minutes. We will eventually. Because at this point, the entire internet is interconnected, and this shit just kind of flows around like herpes. So, yeah. We're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you once again, Chris and Teresa, for joining me on this little endeavor. All of you who are out there listening, whether you're a new listener or someone who's been with us since our first show, if you are liking what you're hearing, what's the sound of my voice and whatnot, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance they'll end up liking us, and that sounds like a beat we can all dance to. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Thank you once again for listening. We will see you all next week, and it's going to get, I have a feeling 2026 is going to be an insane year. Good night, everybody.